Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's up and welcome back to the Kind of Funny Screencast. Of course, I'm Tim Geddes and I'm joined by the sad boy himself, Barrett Courtney.
Tim, what if it's just us?
What if it's just us?
We should separate so we can double our chances.
So good.
It's really
so
quick, before we get into it, because of course, like we've been saying, another banger episode. By this time next week, everybody, I will be a changed person. Because by this time next week, I'll have gone to Disneyland for the first time in 3 years, and I'll finally get to go on Rise of the Resistance.
I'm so excited for you.
Yeah, because the last time we went was November 2019, so literally 3 years ago as of this month, and it was for our engagement photos at the time. And we had gone like, I think Rise of the Resistance was opening at Disneyland in like 3 weeks or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so it was... Alyssa had gone a couple of times after we had gotten our engagement photo, so she's been on it a couple of times, but now I finally get to experience it. I get to do it, and I can't wait to talk about it.
Best ride Disney's ever made.
I'm so excited for everybody involved in this. I didn't do Rise of the Resistance with him, but I did get to enjoy Galaxy's Edge the best way possible, and that is with the one and only Anthony Carboni.
Ooh.
He's not there. That's Barrett. There he is.
Put Barrett's head back up there so he and I look like an Olin Mills portrait of two baby brothers. Put it back up, you coward. I dare you.
How you doing, Carboni?
I'm so good. This show is so good. This show is absolutely amazing. I can't wait to get into this.
Yes, and... joining us, it's the return of the Queen, Sage Ryan. Sage, how are you doing? And who's that little buddy you just showed?
This is Ghost. I'm here with my cats. I'm in my new streaming setup.
Oh my God, Ghost looks like Thomas.
He does. He does. Kevin has a kitty. Like
refusing to look at the camera. I'm so happy to be back, and I'm so upset that of all the time that we have spent talking about Star Wars together, so little of it has been this show.
I know.
But I survived Utah. I survived a studio
very
move.
Very few people can say that. Yeah. That they've survived Utah.
So true.
And actually, when you drive into Utah on the interstate, it says, "Welcome to Utah." No one gets out alive.
Yeah. Exactly. What if there are only two of us that got out of Utah? And I survived binge watching 4 episodes of this show back to back to catch up.
Oh my God. Okay, we're going to get into that because I need to get your thoughts on all of that because it's a lot to take in. But real quick, want to get through the housekeeping, everything. First bit of housekeeping, shout out to Anthony Carboni for giving me this jacket. I was talking about it on Games Daily, but I love that I'm the jacket hand-me-down guy from Carboni, and it's the best thing ever.
That's not a hand-me-down. I got that specifically for you. It's celebration.
Well, wow. I appreciate that even more. And also, I just want to give a major shout out to Kevin, who has figured out the tech to make big head mode.
Barrett. No, this is just my head. What are you guys talking about?
People in the chat noticed.
Oh, really?
People did notice. So I'm excited. Go out of it. It's so unnerving. I love it so much. Also, all of this crazy stuff is possible thanks to your support over on patreon.com/kindoffunny. Our Patreon producers over there, Morgan Lorraine, Fargo Brady, Hillary Bernard, ID Raven, Immersion Fragrances, Delaney Twining, Christopher Rodriguez, the Kind of Funny Destiny 2 PC Clan, Corey Turnipseed, Tall Tree 81, Trent Barry, Joseph A. Carlson, Tranquil Uranium, Macro, 1UP Pest Control, Alex J. Sandoval, James Hastings, Colin Huguenel, and Carrie Palmer. We'll tell you all about the rest later because there's been so much of you supporting us thanks to the launch of the studio. Thank you for your support. Everything's been fantastic. This is our show, Kind of Funny Screencast, where each and every week we get together to talk about the latest in TV, movies, and trailers. We've been doing our weekly breakdowns of Andor. I know a lot of people are starting to watch this show late due to the word of mouth of how good it is. So people are going back.
Finally.
I'm getting the tweets that people have been watching this show. We've been doing every episode, so you can go back and check them out, and that's a good time for everybody. YouTube.com.
No, we got to every episode eventually.
Go for it.
I'm comfortable saying it now. Best Star Wars show.
Oh yeah, 100%.
I don't even think that's a question.
Well,
Yeah.
There are other shows that I would say are more closer to my heart on the animated side, but like
quality.
Yeah, quality, yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
No, I had to think about it a lot, but this week, after watching this episode, I was ready to say this is my favorite Star Wars television series.
Hell yeah.
It's utterly fantastic. We're going to get into all of that, of course. You can go to podcast services, search for Screencast. We'll be right there for you as well if you wanted to check that out. So all of that out of the way. Sage, I want to start with you. What has been your experience with Andor the last couple episodes? Because last time we talked, we hadn't even talked about the heist or anything. So we're going way back. So,
yeah, the last time we talked, I think I was only here for the first three, wasn't I?
Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah, because then you were doing studio moves. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was a very different show when last we spoke. And it was already a very good show, but it was like an unrelated show. Like, I don't know her at all. At this point in the arc, I picked up at 7 and I watched through 11 because I caught up the rest of it. And it was very interesting because as soon as we started going back to like, oh yeah, his mom and like that storyline, I was like, right, that's the same show.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Because it was like, I took that gap in between. I was like, oh right, the first three episodes, we haven't always been in heist mode.
Right.
So in one sitting, essentially, I got through heist, I got through prison.
Oh.
It's been
that's a lot to do in one sitting emotionally.
That's an emotional journey.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely did cry on two occasions in watching it. I cry every time they show that droid. That's just a damn droid.
Oh, and we're going to talk about him again today because Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So today's episode made me cry hard for it. And also, hold on, I'm going to pull up some names because Mr. I run the prison line, hell of a speech.
Andy Serkis?
Yes. Oh,
yeah. So many speeches in this
show. Actual name, yes.
Kino Loy, yeah.
There we go. Oh, there's
Kino Loy, who can't swim.
Oh, so sad.
I can't swim.
Okay, we'll get into all of that. Overall, this show has been incredible. I've had a wonderful time watching it. I'm so grateful to live in a time where we've expanded upon the Star Wars universe in such a way that for the first time ever, it's like it all makes sense. And I know that a lot of that is because of correlation to our world and because of how many like things that they're using as parallels that you're like, oh, I see how these things start. I see how these things escalate. But getting down to these levels within it, I feel like they've so successfully filled in so many gaps in not story, not plot holes, in how the world works in Star Wars. And that's been magic for me.
Yeah, I want to jump in real quick to talk about my thoughts on this episode. Because last week, or a couple weeks ago, after we saw the heist, I was like, I don't know how they're going to maintain this, how they can up it. Then they did the prison stuff. And I'm like, there's no way they can up this. Mm. There's no way they can keep this going. And admittedly, I don't think anything's going to top the prison stuff. That to me is just top, top, top tier.
Yep.
But these motherfuckers, these Tony Gilroy's out there, and he's like, you know what, Tim, I'm up for the challenge. I'm gonna do the one thing that you personally could possibly want more than anything, and that's just make Top Gun Maverick in Star Wars. Because when you look at this episode, there is just so many Top Gun Maverick moments where we have they get up the cliff, there's the aliens there, they see the ship, and they're like, run! I'm like, yo, this is straight out of Maverick. And then you get the end of this episode that is just the dopest dogfight we've had in Star Wars
100%.
Since Rogue One, probably. Like, oh my God, incredible.
I would personally put it above Rogue One just because of just like the moment-to-moment action in that scene. It's short, but it's utterly fantastic.
I love it. The way they build it up, the scale, the beauty of it all. Like, oh my God, such an exciting scene.
Our dude who runs the antique shop just collecting kyber crystals and making a lightsaber ship.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Bananas.
Thank you so much.
Y'all just got a Starbucks delivery?
Yeah, we did.
We're tired. You know what? Okay, here's the thing. We have to stay up till midnight to watch this fucking show, which is great. But let me tell you, staying up till 1:30 in the morning, like watching this and pausing and taking notes and then watching on my PS5 so I can wear the headphones while watching on the big screen to not wake up my wife and then like trying to like rewind. Let me tell you, this thumbstick on the PS5 controller does not like the Disney Plus app, because I swear, I push left, and then it's like, oh, you want to go 10 seconds forward? And it's like, no, that's not what I said.
Disney Plus, figure it out. The scroll bar. Come on, guys. It's not that hard.
It's not.
Netflix has it down pat. Anyways, Carboni, what did you think of this episode?
All right. This episode. Okay, first of all, here comes my controversial opinion about this episode. Y'all are going to be against me. I'm not convinced Marv is dead still.
Oh, no, I'm not against you at all.
I'm still not convinced that Marv is dead. I still think she was faking. I think that the fact that it's called Daughter of Ferrix, like, I totally understand that it's because, oh, she died and now everything is coalescing around Ferrix. I think she's alive. I think she's running some shit. At least I want to believe that.
So real quick, Carboni,
I'm like B2. I'm like B2, man. I'm like, I'm sitting there in the house. I'm like, she's not gone. She's not gone.
It's interesting because I wasn't fully into your, like, I didn't believe your theory last week about it. And with this, I'm not so sure. The way that this show treats death, especially when we saw the prison break and, like, one shot, one kill, like, these motherfuckers are dropping dead. Like, there is not, like, plot armor for these people. The fact that, like, we saw a body, I'm like, yo, she very much could be dead because that's the tone of the show. But we didn't see her body. And I feel like they wouldn't have not shown us it that way if she was actually dead.
See, for me personally, right, it was one of those things where I took it as they didn't show her body to kind of put us more into the shoes of Cassian as much as they could, while still having to show everything that's happening on Ferrix, where it's just like, you don't get to have that moment with her because he didn't. Mm-hmm. So that could absolutely
go either of those ways. Yeah. They've been very, very clever with it.
Yeah.
Very clever. But I'm telling you, I think she's out there and I think she's important. She knew she was being watched. The whole thing of what they do on Ferrix, like burning people and then turning them into a brick. It's like, oh, so there's no evidence? Come on.
Yeah.
Bear. I'm just saying. I don't know, but I'm just saying.
Yeah. Bear, what'd you think of this one?
I thought it was great. You know, of course, it was not the same energy and bombastic kind of episode like last week was, and we really needed that. We needed to take a breather, especially now that we know with everything, like, a lot was built up in this episode to build to this funeral that's happening as the finale, right? Where it all seems like it's going to come together, where Cassian hears about it. You figure he probably wants to go home to say goodbye. Everybody assumes he's going, right? But then, like, what? How is that all going to blow up in everybody's direction? And I thought this was a fantastic, let's take a moment after everything that just happened in the prison break and let's reset everything up again.
Get the pieces in place.
Because, like, the prison arc, right, it felt like mainly that. And then every once in a while, you're getting check-ins with Mothma, with Luthen, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And this felt like the proper, like, okay, what are they actually up to right now? Let's get full on scenes with Luthen checking in with Saw, more stuff with Mothma and Vel and Mothma's daughter, who's in a weird cult and stuff like that. I thought it was, again, another killer episode. I can't wait to see what they do next week, and just to see where it all ends. Like, next week is the finale.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things, we say it every week, where it's like, where do they go from here? And, like, I'm going to trust them at this point to, like, fucking nail it and land, stick the landing here. But, like, I'm just excited of, like, all right, we know there's going to be a funeral. What's going to happen there? Right. And, so, yeah, it's another fantastic episode. I can't wait to get into the details here.
Sage?
I got to back up Anthony's theory. I also think that maybe she's not dead. I don't know. They're being kind of sus about it. And this show takes every opportunity to break our hearts, which is always my complaint about Rogue One. Rogue One didn't take the opportunities to hurt my feelings that I believe it should have. And this show has taken every single opportunity to hurt my feelings successfully. So to not see Marva die is very strange to me. And maybe that is. Maybe that is where it's just like, hey, in this world, we're telling you that sometimes shit just happens and it's not in battle. It wasn't in fight of the rebellion. The Empire didn't do it. Sometimes people just get sick and they die and it sucks. Which also would be very on brand for the show, I agree. But there was a couple of things in the way that they alluded to it and the way specifically the droid is acting that I'm like, I don't know, man. I think that there might be something else there. I don't know what that is, but there has to be some elaboration on what she was doing with the rebellion, and we haven't gotten that tied off yet. And them not tying it off would surprise me. Mm-hmm. Overall, I mean, for the show, for this episode, I thought it was phenomenal. I thought the emotional, like, aftermath of the big events is exactly what this episode was. So much of this show has been huge event, consequences of actions that people believed were good, and how much are you willing to sacrifice for what you believe to be good, and at what point is it still good and not just anti-evil? Yeah. And right now they're sitting in that. Okay, we did this massive prison break. How many people died? How many of those people? Right. That guy, just because he couldn't swim, we literally might never see what happened. We don't know. Could these probably thousands, I would guess, of how many people were kept on this prison overall have just swam out and straight up died? Those are those kind of consequences where it's like sometimes shit just happens and sometimes you make the wrong choice or sometimes you make the only choice you have and there's consequences for it. So I'm hoping that's not the choice for Marva, and she doesn't have to be alive, but I do want some kind of like, what the hell was she doing? We know she was working with the rebellion. What was it? I guess is my question.
Carboni, you about to say something?
Oh no.
Well, I want to then shout out Mon Mothma, who continues to crush the show. But I love that her storyline is always, to me, the perfect kind of like breathing moment to like go away from like the A plot, and like we get to her, and I love how much they've just kind of been building this foundation that it now feels like A plot. Like it feels like every storyline in the show is equally important, whether it's Luthen, Mon Mothma, or Andor, how they all kind of interconnect, even all the Ferrix stuff. I just love that they hit that point of it all weaves together. Yes. But her having the line of I'm in so much trouble, Fel.
Yeah.
And like just seeing it on her face and like her explaining it all, it's like, damn, like I just love that the show grounds this stuff, and we always use these words to like describe like, oh, it's not just all the high fantasy like space stuff, Star Wars, lightsabers and the Force and whatever. It's like, oh, these are real people with real issues they're going through. This speech to me is the like perfect evidence of that. And like this, for a show that's had so many great monologues, I love that this episode we got one from Mon, we got one from I forget her name, starts with an L, but Luthen's assistant person.
Clea.
Her just going off. Like, I just,
oh, dude, that was the other quote that I was like going back and forth of what to start with today. I don't have lately. I have always.
Always.
Yeah. Bro. Yep. And you really feel that, like, more so than Luthen. I think I talked about this a week or two ago, where it's like, you feel like she's more in control of, like, taking care and making sure all of these different rebel cells are, like, doing their shit more than he is. Which is, I love that they're sticking with that because it's awesome.
I started this show worried about, you know, why we have never seen Luthen before, and thinking to myself, by the end of these two seasons, Luthen clearly meets his end, and what's going to happen? I am now worried about Clea, who runs the rebellion, as far as I'm concerned.
And I honestly think, if we're talking theories and stuff, I think it'll be something regarding his actions that gets them both killed for sure.
I mean, he has to have his downfall, right? Yeah. Like, I feel like he's kind of right now getting to play the one in charge and like the one that's like always like one step ahead. He's the one willing to sacrifice the men because he's not the one being sacrificed, you know. Oh, and also Saw Gerrera getting him again, exactly like we were asking for. I love it, man. The whole scene there, the way Luthen talked to him, the back and forth, calling out the two tubes guy of like, yo, he's my man on the inside. He's like, bro, what are you talking about? The sick ass black X-wings. Oh my God! What a scene!
So paranoid.
Always Saw Gerrera, and Luthen just using that. Just, you're willing to burn him, and if it were me, I'm just like, get him.
As the resident Saw Gerrera hater on with this Star Wars crew here, this was a good episode. This was a really good scene because I liked how much even just Luthen's actions here really helped cement his kind of mental downfall of like not trusting anybody, even people he is operating with, of just like, the mind games that Luthen has to play with the entire rebellion as a whole, and with him kind of making the decision his, and he knows he's going to make the decision to like not tell Krieger about this whole thing and let Krieger kind of go down with the ship in a way. But just how that plays into when you see him eventually again in Rogue One, and he is fully splintered off from like what the rebellion becomes, right? You understand of like, yeah, I get it. And I love that we see more of, because Luthen tries to kind of put this decision on him, him kind of being forced to think of the ways that he was trained once again by like Anakin and Obi-Wan and stuff, mm-hmm. back from the Clone
Wars.
So
I'll say two things about this. Number one, you're not the only Saw Gerrera hater on this panel.
So true.
Also dislike Saw Gerrera. You will all come around. But also I will say, even as somebody who loves Saw Gerrera.
Save the trees.
I will say it seemed weird during this episode where he goes, oh, it's for the greater good. And Luthen goes, well, call it what you want. And he goes, let's call it war. And they then he looks into the camera and says, Star Wars. I thought that was a little weird.
I want you to know that out loud, watching this episode with someone, I made that joke.
Yeah. I love it. I love that they did that.
I absolutely said the same thing out loud the moment he said it. He said, let's call it war. And then I was like, Star War?
I was too tired to make that joke in my head.
Yeah. I love that this show, like in the complete opposite of that joke, does a couple things that are, I think, really interesting in terms of like adding new elements to Star Wars that we haven't seen really, where we get Mon Mothma's kid kind of in this like religious situation going on, which
Leia wants to be a trad wife. That's like a Chandrilan thing.
Like, all
what is that about?
I thought that was super cool.
I wanted to circle back to that too. Because I think in general, Leia's whole storyline is very interesting. And, you know, Barrett was like, is it a cult? Like, it seems like she's in some kind of cult. Like, it's very paralleled to a lot of the like movements right now from like conservative white women of being like, I want to go back to when we didn't have bank accounts. That was cool. I bet it was awesome. And this like romanticized idea of like a lack of freedom and rights, like human rights. And there is an actual movement of people, specifically like white women in the United States, pushing for that like back to traditional values, mm-hmm. that's like horrifying and absolutely like a misinterpretation of what that experience was like for women, and B, just like an absolute fuck you to everybody and everyone else. So there's a level of that it's like, it's not quite a cult. It is this like, we want to go back to the traditional values of their planet, which obviously we saw like Mon Mothma, we know about now her arranged marriage from it and all of these things, right. Which is very scary and weird, but it elaborates a little bit for me because I kept being like, we know her daughter fucking hates her. Like, we know Mon Mothma's daughter hates her. And I was like, I get the interpretation from that it's just because like her husband hates her and he says terrible things about her and she's much more like her father and they have this like alliance against her and have made her like the villainous bad parent. But this piece of that expanded on that for me, where it's like, oh, you not only like just align with your father and dislike what you consider to be the strictness of your mother, it's this weird like your mother's the progressive and the child is this weird conservative.
Yes,
that's a weird scary storyline. That's very,
when Mon is like, when Mon is like, this is the only thing she shows up on time for.
Yeah,
it's like, and as she's doing the chant, She's looking Mon straight in the eye, and she sees Mon Mothma drinking her wine and like just trying to be like, I have to let her do this because she loves doing it and she hates me so much already, but like, what do I do?
Friends.
And we've talked a lot about how like, yeah, a lot of it is Perrin kind of poisoning Leia against Mon, but a lot of it is also that like between the Senate and the rebellion, Leia's right. Mon Mothma is not around, and it seems like Mon Mothma does not care about Leia. She only brings Leia around for government things. And so from Leia's perspective, and it's, you know, we know that it's because Mon Mothma is fighting for the greater good, and we know how much Mon Mothma cares, but you can see where from the point of view of a teenage daughter, it's like she is absent and she is cold and she only cares about her job. And so I'm going to rebel against that.
That's a very interesting point, because rebelling against that is, if we had traditional values in where women weren't able to be things like senators, for instance, my mother would be here. My mother would not be busy with her job all the time.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, it's crazy. And like, and it's, I love that Vel is like, wait, I didn't even know we were doing this again. And like, to your point, Sage, it's like, oh no, it's become very trendy again. And you think about like, oh yeah, cause fascism.
Yep.
Cause fascism 100%. Is on the rise.
Yeah. It's like, that's the thing, is like the culture of it all where, you know, forever we've seen there's the rebels, there's the empire, but now getting into it and it's like, there's the Force and the Jedi, and like, it's religion in some ways to some people and all this. I love the idea that there has to be other sides. And like, we see the extremists of the rebels, right? Yeah. That they built up with Guerrera over the movies and shows and stuff. But to now kind of see the like realities of what the fascism of the empire would do.
The extremists that aren't just Palpatine, right? Yes. And are just people, right?
The people. And just the way that we've learned so much about the Coruscant culture of the rich people that we haven't really seen before. And I just appreciate it. Like, whether it's the costuming or just the way they interact, like all of the being married off and like all of that, just like layers that I never, ever expected to get in a Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
I do love, like, when you talk about those layers, we're also, because of it, we're getting deeper character layers too. The conversation between Vel and Mon after this happens, where, I mean, Mon Mothma is nearly in tears telling Vel what she's had to do to fund this. And Vel's realization that Aldani was the reason that finances got tightened up and the reason that Mon Mothma is now under even more scrutiny than she was before, and that Vel is directly responsible. And then you see Vel run to Luthen's shop and be like, yo, we've got to move now. I did all this for you. Like, Vel is getting desperate because not only has she been separated from Cinta, right? She is now being told, like, what you did has caused the Empire to come down on your family in a way that honestly is unavoidable at this point. But it also makes me think, like, Vel asks, like, hey, are you thinking about, like, accepting offers for her hand? And Mon Mothma's like, kinda. And last week we were like, she would never do it, right?
Yeah.
She's thinking about it, but she would never do it, right?
Yeah, and she needs someone like her cousin to come in and be like, yo, you're in too deep at this point. Like, what this is doing to you and your livelihood and your just like your mental capacity to be able to handle all this shit, like, it's destroying you. And like that, yeah, that scene with them talking to each other, you just really feel, more so than any other episode before, the ground just crumbling beneath Mothma's feet. And like you were saying earlier, like how this kind of turned from like a D plot, I do think it's risen to be kind of the main thing, because I do think whatever happens with Mothma as her public figure and stuff like that is going to be the center of like the explosion, whether it's next week's episode or very early on in season two. Like, that's going to be when like shit really hits the fan, is whenever Mothma has to go either into hiding or publicly be like, yo, fuck y'all, I'm out, I'm gonna go hang out with the rebellion kind of shit. And it's so good.
The second season of this show, it's called Andor, but the second season of this show will be about Mon Mothma.
Yes.
equally if not more than Cassian. You know what I mean? Cassian's, like, once we figure out what's going on with Cassian and the last ties he has, whether like Marva and Bix and B2, once we figure that stuff out, which I think we will by the end of next episode, because we know next season is skipping, every episode's going to be a year or whatever. We know where Cassian is heading, right? At this point, it's almost like a Casino Royale thing of like, we're just going to watch Cassian become a spy the same way we watch James Bond become James Bond. That's a pretty interesting story. But I think the more interesting story in season two is Mon Mothma giving up her reputation, her wealth, her position, her station, everything,
her family,
that she apparently, her family, everything that she ran away from on Chandrila, she has to go through a downfall to become the figurehead of the rebellion. And I think that's going to be such an interesting story next season.
It definitely is. Before we get to you, Sage, real quick, I want to tell you about our sponsors. Remember, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunny and not have to hear these ads, just like more of our Patreon producers, Skylar Peterson, Casey Andrew, Elliot, Brian Chaney, Casey Kern, G. Greg, Trevor Starkey, Adam, Jacob Moyfelt, Super Daddy Kyle, Undertopian, David Mintel,
the Mind Freak,
Jordan from Kansas, Cameron Bose, Jake Holbs, David Huzenga, Jerkachu, Molecule, Nathan Lamoth, Monica Boominlog, and Delaney Twining have done. But for everyone else, here's our sponsors. Shout out to Rocket Money for sponsoring this episode. We all love gobbling up content, and we have an understanding of what subscriptions we use, right? Or do we? Do you know how much your subscriptions really cost? Most Americans think they spend around $80 a month on subscriptions when the actual total is closer to $200+. That's right. You could be wasting hundreds of dollars each month on subscriptions you don't even know about. There's this app that we love using that takes care of that for us, and it's called Rocket Money, formerly known as Truebill. The app shows all your subscriptions in one place and then cancels for you whatever you don't still want. Rocket Money can even find subscriptions you didn't know you were paying for. You may even find out you've been double charged for a subscription. To cancel a subscription, all you have to do is press cancel, and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. Get rid of useless subscriptions with Rocket Money now. Go to rocketmoney.com/kindoffunny. Seriously, it could save you hundreds per year. That's rocketmoney.com/kindoffunny. Cancel your unnecessary subscriptions right now at rocketmoney.com/kindoffunny. Shout out to Shopify for sponsoring this episode. We love Shopify here at Kind of Funny because we use it to run our very own kindoffunny.com/store. Shopify makes it simple to sell to anyone from anywhere. Start selling with Shopify and join the platform simplifying commerce for millions of your favorite businesses worldwide. With Shopify, you'll create an online store in your vibe, discover new customers, and grow the following that keeps them coming back. Shopify has all the sales channels sorted, so your business keeps growing, from an in-person POS system to an all-in-one e-commerce platform, even across social media platforms like TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram. And thanks to 24/7 support and free libraries full of educational content, Shopify's got you every step of the way. It's how every minute new sellers around the world make their first sale with Shopify. And you will too. When you're ready to launch your thing into the spotlight, do it with Shopify, the commerce platform backing millions of businesses down the street and around the globe. Go on, try Shopify for free and start selling anywhere. Sign up for a free trial at shopify.com/kfgames, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/kfgames to start selling online today. shopify.com/kfgames. Shout out to Policy Genius for sponsoring this episode. Life insurance is the type of thing you never hope you need, but the reality is mortgage payments, childcare, and other expenses don't disappear when you're gone. And since life insurance typically gets more expensive as we age, now's the time to buy. Policy Genius gives you a smarter way to find and buy the right coverage for you and your family. Their technology makes it easy to compare life insurance quotes from top companies like AIG and Prudential in just a few clicks to find your lowest price. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $17 per month for $500,000 of coverage. And Policy Genius has licensed agents who can help you find options that offer coverage in as little as a week and avoid unnecessary medical exams. They're not incentivized to recommend one insurer over another, so you can trust their guidance. There are no added fees, and your personal info is private. No wonder they have thousands of five-star reviews on Google and Trustpilot. Your loved ones deserve a financial safety net. You deserve a smarter way to find and buy it. Head to policygenius.com or click the link in the description to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. And we're back. Sage, you were going to say something.
I had a question for y'all, actually. I want to theorize, which we don't do it too much of, but we don't know a lot about Mon Mothma's family from the previous contexts.
Correct.
Do you think dead or just separated because they're like, we're with the Empire, get wrecked, Mom?
I would imagine
I think it's separated. I think that's more heartbreaking, in all honesty.
Yeah.
You know they're out there.
For them to know that they just against her.
For them to dig in their heels more of being pro-Empire and all that stuff. I think Vel is another one, though, that I don't think makes it out alive.
Oh, yeah, I don't think she can, right? Yeah. I feel like Vel, there's these characters that I mean, they can write around this, and they have before, but I do right. feel like they're introducing characters that, like, they're making so important that they have to die before a certain point, or else mm-hmm. we would have known.
And, like,
them.
Especially of, like, with the implication, because people know that they're related, right? That, like, yeah. if Mothma fucks off and stuff like that, people are going to be like, what's up with you, Vel?
What's up with your cousin?
That's tricky. I know.
You want to talk about family, though.
I was laughing when we came back from Athens because Tim sprinted onto the set.
Yeah, Tim was doing the countdown. We're coming back in five. I thought we had a whole minute left, so I was like, oh, damn. Well, we made it, everybody. We out here.
Yep.
Go for it, Corbin.
Talking about family.
Mm-hmm.
Let me talk about B2.
We got to talk about B2.
We have to,
We
got to
talk about Bix. We got to talk about the people that are still on Ferrix. B2 as the character that can express the emotions that Marva and Cassian cannot express towards one another has been ridiculously heartbreaking, but was so heartbreaking this episode. Barrett, over the break, you said it was like a pet, and it is. It's very much, it's a mix between a pet and then also the son or the child that is able to be in touch with their emotions about losing a parent that Cassian cannot be in touch with. And to watch B2 be like, well, I could just stay here and maybe you could stay with me and we could just wait here. It was the Futurama dog episode all over again. Yeah. And I just couldn't. I couldn't. I was like, every time B2 was on screen, I was like wiping my eyes. It was rough to watch.
I was a known B2.
Hater?
I don't want to say hater, but I'm going to say
doubter.
Like, doubter. I was a doubter in the earlier episodes. And I mean, he won me over here. Like, clearly. Like, this was such a scene-stealing performance by this little dude.
I know.
And what I love about it is, Carboni, I think you made a really good point about, like, what this did to contextualize Marva. That's her name, right? Marva. Yeah. Not just as, like, a mother, but as a mom, right? Like, as like, it's like the house and home type thing, but it's like, it's not just, oh, by default, you're the parental figure. It's like, it allows us to see her as like, oh, like, she's such a loving, caring presence in Andor's life as well as this little dude's life. And it was just so beautifully done. And like, it was a tough, tough thing to watch.
Now that we're talking about the family dynamics and stuff like that, to bring it back a little bit to the theory of Marva still being alive or not, I just, for me, again, being a doubter of her still being alive, just her quote from when they say goodbye, when he's trying to like fuck off and go to space Miami, she's like, I'm staying home. Like, one of the last things she says to him is, that's just love, nothing you can do about that. I've never loved anything the way I love you. And again, as a storyteller, knowing Tony Gilroy as a storyteller, I feel like that's the most heartbreaking way for them to say goodbye and not be able to say anything else to each other ever again. Mm-hmm. Maybe she's still alive, but I feel like that's still going to be the last scene that her and Cassian share together, for sure. But B2, y'all nailed it with just like how heartbreaking it is to see this droid perform in a way that no droid has ever performed before. It was a lot to take in at 12:45 in the morning.
Bix we see as well, and what I love is like Krieger, for a character that like we don't know and like honestly doesn't matter too much to us, is so instrumental in so many things. Seeing number one what these months of being held in that hotel or apartment building or wherever she is by the Empire, and the Gorst interrogation technique and like what it's done to her was like intense. Yep. But also like that, I want to give a shout out to this performance moment when she sees the hologram of Krieger and she has this like so many conflicting emotions of like,
what's
they didn't get
do?
Him. They still haven't gotten him. Yeah. And like, she wants to show like a little bit of relief, but she can't because she knows like she can't really honestly answer or dishonestly answer this question. Like, you see in her eyes that she wants to be like, oh yeah, that was the guy, you got him. He's
it's
dead.
The reverse psychology thing of like, what move should I do right now? And there's no right answer.
Yeah.
Cause they, I mean, and one thing that's awesome is like from a storytelling perspective is they show her up against the wall and all she can think about anymore, like she can't even think anymore.
Right.
And so like the reverse psychology, like we in that moment have to wonder if she even has the capacity to pull that stuff off anymore.
Right. That's how I took that scene. That was like where she doesn't answer. I took that as like she can't. Yeah. You know, like she is so far gone from this. Like she's able to process things. Again, you see a little bit of like a little bit of tearing in her eyes and stuff like that. And yeah, but to be able to think on that capacity of like thinking five moves ahead, right? I don't think to me, just because of how much she's probably gone through, she can't even think on that level.
It's just wild to me how much this show, this season so far, has kind of taken a lot of our criticisms of Rogue One and just been like, well, this is how they should have done it. And I feel like this is another example of the Borg gullet stuff, where it's just like, this is the right way to show this type of torture scene from all this.
What if Borg gullet
makes sense? I originally was like, why do we need a Gorst when they have a Borg gullet? They could have brought out a Borg gullet.
They haven't discovered
it. You're right. But going off of that a little bit more, like the things that I appreciate most about the show have been the things that were hinted at in some of the movies that like were my things I liked most, but then we didn't get enough of them. An example being, we talk about this a lot, the Canto Bight scene where it's like the X-Wings and the TIE Fighters are made by the same people. Like that whole idea was like, oh, that's super cool. We kind of see a little bit more of that here. But even the idea of like Finn being a stormtrooper and then the blood on the helmet and like looking at it and like, oh wow, they're going there with this. Like they're actually showing like the death of this and like the blood even is just like such a thing. But they never really took that anywhere. Like, they kind of hinted and played with it just a little bit, but they didn't really do anything. This episode starting off and having Andor and Melvin?
Melshi.
Yeah. My boy Melvin.
Melvin.
Like, desperately clinging on.
And he's like,
their skin, like, ripped and messed up.
He's like, I can't move my hands anymore.
It's so real.
This scene needed someone to yell from below, climb.
Oh my god, that's very, yeah, very funny.
They didn't say climb.
Yeah, they didn't, that's surprising.
They didn't say it this time, but because they were feet, showing it.
Yeah, they did. They just showed it, man. Seeing their feet, how messed up because they didn't have shoes, like all that stuff, and then to then see this torture scene of how Bix is like, I don't know that I've ever seen somebody that I believed has been tortured for as long as it seems like she has with that performance than we saw in this. Like the makeup, the performance from her, incredible, incredible stuff.
Yeah. Sage, yeah. I think you were going to say something about the interpretation here.
Yeah, I mean, with the Bix stuff, like you were saying, a huge shout out to the makeup department on that. The way that they changed her appearance in that was so distressing to look at, and her performance was absolutely incredible. But the thing that puts a pin in it for me of what her capacity could be or what she's clinging on to and making these, like, if she can make these decisions at this point, is one of the last like scenes where we saw her speaking was her saying, you're not going to believe me either way, are you? Mm-hmm, and yeah. She was like, no, I guess you're right. So there is no point in Bix cracking. Like, she's going to be killed either way. She's going to be tortured either way. And she is so certain of that. And you could see her give up in that moment and be like, well, then this is what it's going to be. And I don't see any reality. I mean, losing the capacity to think and speak and lie, for instance, mm-hmm. is part of that. But like, that's there for a reason. And to me, that line is there because that's why she has not continued to try and fight her way out of it. Mm. She's just like, all right, then. And like, that is helpful to everybody. She's cracking and she's given some information, but to some extent, she's held on to a lot as well, which I think is very interesting. Also, I didn't get to talk about B2 emote.
Go for it.
God, B2 is so wonderful. And I'm gonna give a hot take. I think might be best droid. I'm gonna take the original trilogy out for like nostalgia reasons, because like, once you start factoring in like your nostalgia for R2 and things like that, it's tough. But I prefer B2 to K2SO.
I understand that. I think there's more of an emotional punch with B2 compared to K2SO. Forget someone in our chat, I forget who it was, had the theory that maybe
I'd like
the,
to have a word, okay, if I may.
We'll talk about your bias. We'll talk about your bias soon with, you know, sharing the same name as the actor who plays C-3PO. But a theory that B2, like, they're going to transfer him
B2
into
Snoke?
K2SO.
They're going to Millennium Falcon him. Yeah. I don't think that's it.
I don't think that
seemed like a Tony Gilroy thing to do.
Yeah.
But I'm going to be honest. He could pull it off.
Yeah, he could pull it off. My counterpoint would be BD-1, and I just love that little guy. And he also goes on a very emotional like journey and arc along with Cal Kestis. So that would be my counterpoint. But honestly, you make a good case, B2.
My hot take about the hot takes is that, like, again, B2 won me over. I feel like if a droid can talk, it's cheating. And look, maybe that's a dumb thing to me, but I stand by it. And sure, he stutters a little bit, but he's still talking.
Okay, but then how do you like human characters, Tim?
No, but I'm saying we're talking about the droids here. And I'd rather if humans just beeped too.
Wow. Okay. A lot of droids talk, though, Tim.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
That's not cheating.
They cheat too. That's all that I'm saying.
Literally, one of the first droids we ever see speaks 40,000 languages.
And he's not my favorite. R2's my boy.
That's a funny take.
So you're saying, you like the astromechs that don't talk and just beep a lot.
That's what I'm saying. Uh-huh. You're an astromech fan.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Is your not favorite droid then the one who, you know, Hatchet behind the back in Obi-Wan?
Yeah, well, I was a bigger fan because homie didn't talk.
Wow. That's,
and look, I'm a fan of the ones that talk. I don't remember her name.
Your droids to be seen, not heard is so weird.
Elso or whatever, but from Solo, loved her. Thought she was fantastic. K2SO, obviously great. I love them, but in terms of are they my favorite droids? No, and they cannot be because they speak.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
Weirdest hot take.
Really quick, because before we get too lost in the weeds on the droid talk and before we talk about my man Cyril Figgis here, I want to bring it back to the very, very beginning of the episode where, you know, they're climbing and then they see the quad jumper. They see the guys over there and like, all right, we got to go steal them. And then they get caught by like a weird spider web net thing that looks just so moist and gross.
Call them squigglies.
Yeah, it was really
gross.
They come out
like all like slimed looking, like Ghostbusters slimed looking.
But only just a little bit too. And that was just like, ugh.
Melshi, as we know, winds up in Rogue One. We're very excited that Melshi, that they have this backstory between Cassian and Melshi. But the owners of that quad jumper, which of course is a ship that was introduced in The Force Awakens and we haven't seen much of, so it was exciting to see the quad jumper. The quad jumper, if you remember, is the ship that looked better than the Millennium Falcon.
Exactly.
Yes. Well, not that it looked better, but that it was less garbage of a ship than the Millennium Falcon.
That's what I'm saying. It's like you look at the two of them, they're like, oh, that's the one that's going to get us places. Oh, and I love that. But these two beings are Caradians, and one of the Caradians that is there, that's Syced Ok. That guy is going to wind up a partisan. He's in Rogue One. He's with Saw Gerrera, the one that's like pontificating on like, oh, the Empire comes and they ruin the water. Your prison ruins everything. And like they don't speak enough. They don't speak enough of the language to understand like what's going on. And it's like, oh, is this guy going to kill us just for knowing the Empire?
Yeah.
And then it's like, no, turns out I hate the fucking Empire. We all do. We don't eat food anymore because the water's poisoned. By the way, in just a few years, I'm going to be a partisan.
Yeah, wow, that's okay. I when I saw him last night, I was like, why the hell do I know this man? Why do I know it? Like, so familiar looking. And that's a good call out there.
It's the goggles that he has on. You're like, oh.
Yeah.
So which is also why he's called Syced Ok.
Of course.
So it's fun to see them.
I love that they call the other guy Two Tubes. Like, that's just his name.
Two tubes, what? Baby.
He has two tubes.
Yep, he's got two tubes.
Good for them.
Dude, Luthen just being like, yeah, it's two tubes. And two tubes being like, what the fuck, dog?
Killer. So good.
I want to talk about our boy Cyril Figgis here because he gets a phone call late at night.
Which, I got to say, probably my least favorite part of the show so far.
Really?
The way this phone call happened, it just, the quality level of it just seemed like a different show. The fact that he just gets like a broken up FaceTime, like something about this, I was like,
the guy who's playing the MAGA hat, space MAGA hat guy, is definitely it didn't feel on par with like the rest of the performances and stuff like that. And I think it was just maybe a scene that they knew they had to write in that maybe just like wasn't a part of his personal like framework. It did feel a little off, but like for storytelling and stuff, I did like it. Of like, he's hitting up anybody he knows that might have like an inside to like what the hell is going on with Andor and stuff like that. So I liked that, you know, again, with the ripple effect of Marva's, you know, supposed death, right, of just like how that's reaching people and stuff like that. And again, kind of like building up to whatever this thing is happening at the funeral next week, which I'm really excited for.
And I know, Tim, you're not a fan generally of the comic relief in these shows, and that makes sense. Like, especially for this show, comic relief is very strangely placed. What it is those first three episodes had a good amount of that humor and that tone of this MAGA hat guy. Yeah. When we were focusing on Cyril's story and we were focusing on, did you raise your collar, and all of those like humorous moments, like dark humor for these like weird kind of Nazi dudes. We've moved on so far past that at this point in the series. That's what I was saying, is like those first three episodes feel like they were a different show now. So that weird kind of getting pulled back into it, personally, I enjoyed, because I was like, oh, right. In the beginning, this was fun. We're not having fun anymore. Everything's terrible and like worse. But there was that moment where like, for some people, this is still fun. And the way that he still enjoys this of like, yeah, my buddy's down here. And this is like an exciting, like it is that like MAGA hat dude
like
thing.
Like QAnon, like we're hitting up each other on forums and stuff, because my friend in this thing like heard this and stuff like that. Yeah.
And I do honestly
tone deaf of him.
I thought the bit where like they just couldn't hear each other, I like, if you've got to give me exposition like that, I love that they at least tried to make like a bit out of it. And I laughed a couple times where it's just like, no, I'm still here on this. And it's like, oh my God, just tell me the one thing you need to tell me. This is so frustrating.
Yep.
And I just like that everything in Cyril Karn's life is just a little frustrating all the time. Because he deserves
it. Mom is just like kind of out there listening. He's like, get out, Mom.
And she's still talking shit to him too. And she's like, you're obsessive. And it's like, lady, do you know the serial killer that you're raising here in this in this son that you have? Like, come on, have some
Edie
more
Karn's
awareness.
Edie Karn's bedhead was so funny, and it was one of my highlights of the episode. I do want to say, like, one of the last sequences we haven't touched on here is Luthen and Luthen's run-in with the Empire, and how honestly Luthen gets close.
Yeah.
Like, Luthen gets close to getting, so that's the ship is a Cantwell class arrester. It was not created for Solo. It was actually something that was created for the original film that wasn't used, but the satellite dishes were obviously repurposed for the Death Star.
Mm-hmm.
And when the crew was making Solo, they took this original art from the first film, which was made, the guy's name was Cantwell, and so they named it after him.
Oh, that's cool.
So that's a Cantwell class arrester. And if they had thought immediately that Luthen was a problem, they could have blown Luthen out of the sky with like one shot. There are like cannons that arrester has that they can power up that would have gotten him. But I love that Luthen has like a Batman / James Bond car in the Fondor.
It's the coolest thing ever. And again, going back to the Top Gun Maverick stuff, it's like with the Chafe stuff that they drop back. It's like I love that he used that, where it's like he threw the shit into the tractor beam to like speed it all up and like explode. Yeah. But Carboni, what you're talking about here of like they could have done that and just taken them all out. What I love so much about this show is we're seeing the Empire. Whenever we get like just a group of them on the bridge and they're all just kind of talking to each other, they don't know what they're doing. Like, they're like, we should have trained more on this. Like, we need more practice.
Like, even when the number, the ID checks out and it's like, all right, so we let them go. And it's like one of those things that's like the back and forth where like in that moment where the ID checks out and it's like, oh God, he's preparing to run away. Now he's going to definitely look guilty and shit like that. But then the officer is like, no, we need to train more. So like, we're just going to like have him go through the process. And it's like, oh fuck, no, he should still like run away and stuff like that. And then the back opens up, and just the way that front dish just tears apart.
So sick.
Is some of the coolest stuff we've seen.
So the, that sort of shrapnel thing, we have seen it before in the expanded universe, but it's generally accepted that it's very expensive. The reason why that shrapnel, why every smuggler doesn't have that shrapnel, is it's incredibly expensive. And so the idea is that Luthen Rail is like really the only person that can afford to have this basically space tugboat tricked out like this. The droid, it's called the Fondor droid because there's like no other droid that has the capabilities or anything like that. By the way, shout out to David W. Collins, my boy, who is the voice of the Fondor droid. But the things that it can do, where it's like, well, let's prepare these countermeasures. Like every time you release that shrapnel, it's probably more than a smuggler makes in a year. But it's what you need to destroy a tractor beam. The idea that he has like probably access to Kyber or something else that he can burn through to give his ship dual wielding Darth Maul, like
the Iron Man 2
lightsabers?
Kind of thing where he's got them in the wrists and
dude,
stuff like that.
He straight up did a barrel roll with lightsabers to destroy the TIE fighters and then immediately hyperspeeded out. I was like, what are we doing? This is so fucking ridiculous.
But it's so cool.
Oh my god, it's so cool.
And I love that it's being done in a show where every time somebody does something like that, there's discussion of how much money they're spending, right?
Yeah.
So it's like every time Luthen flips this switch, it's like, fuck, I got to sell another piece of like the fucking original Jedi Temple or something.
Shit, like we got to do another Aldani. God.
Yeah. I also wanted to point out when they do the Alderaan code, there's a 2505 in there, which of course is May 25th, which is the original release date of Star Wars.
Of course.
So it's always fun when they throw those things in with the numbers.
I think the last thing we really have to talk about then, everybody's finding out about Marva's death, and the show ends with Cassian finding out in the most just like heartbreaking way, man, where he's calling the buddy that he was trying to like help get him off planet with, like originally back in like episode 2 or 3 or whatever. And it's the first time we've seen him, I think, since then. And he's like, just tell Marva, like, I'm okay. Like I'm safe and all this stuff. I'll try to get back when I can. And just like, you see it in his eyes, like this guy who I don't even remember the name of, where he's like,
Zan
is like, I don't know how to tell him right now. And just the way he says that without like straight up saying it is just so good.
I love too, like we keep talking about how great the writing is in this show and like how just airtight the dialogue is, but him being like, Cass, blah, blah, blah. He's like, stop saying my name. Cass, blah, blah, blah. Stop saying my name. Like they say it a couple times. And then he says, Cass, your mother's dead. And it's just like, so it just hits perfectly. And I also love their commitment to the symbolism of him on the beach, like the same looking out at the horizon, like we see later when he dies at the end of Rogue One. But even before this, when we in earlier in the season, we see as he's like about to go on the adventure that we saw him go on, there was another moment like this. And I just love that it kind of is like every time an era of Cassian's life dies, he has this like horizon thing. And now his mother being dead.
Someone pointed out too, of like when he was a kid and Marva takes him on the ship and he wakes up on the ship with him. He sees her, and then it's like a shining, like bright sun, like right behind her and stuff as well. So it's like a mixture of the beach, but then you see the sun kind of peeking through the clouds and stuff. So, yeah, that was.
I just love that anytime Cassian's on a beach vacation planet, some shit's gonna go wrong. The man can't have a day on the beach. He simply cannot.
Dude, real quick.
I'm worried about his girlfriend back in Space Miami.
Yeah,
I know.
So, yeah.
Speaking of Space Miami, real quick. I've seen online some people are saying that they wish there was more aliens in this because there is a lot of like human characters. I love that the room that he sneaks into that he like hid the stuff, there's just two aliens like just cuddling on the bed. It's like awesome. Like I just love
they probably
that
had
touch.
Some of those greenies, man.
Yeah, they had some of those. I'm surprised no one found his stash after what I assume was like a couple months at that point.
It was up high. It was on the highest shelf.
You don't think anybody else who's going to sleazy Space Miami is also trying to hide shit up there, you know?
No, Barrett, you have to get on a step stool. Certainly nobody could find it. It was on a step stool.
You fucking got me there, Carboni.
But Space Miami's also empty now.
Yeah.
The whole Space Miami beach was completely.
I wonder how many people they arrested there just to be like, hey, we need more prison labor hands, you know?
Or evacuated because they didn't want people to find out about the prison or any other number of things that like they were cracking down on this planet and things were clearly going south and they were incarcerating as many people as they could. But I do love this final conversation between Cassian and Melshi, where Melshi like from go in the prison was like, nobody knows, nobody cares, nobody understands. And everybody's like, shut up, shut up, shut up. And then he gets out of prison. He's like, oh no, clearly nobody knows and nobody cares.
Yep.
And he's already dialed in. I think Melshi is already ready for the rebellion. And I think Cassian is still He's still on the fence.
He's getting there, but yeah, he's not quite there yet.
Which is weird because he's been in this fight since he was five.
Yeah.
I think the thing is, it's gonna take him a while to realize that that's the fight. He does not want to be part of the fight. Mm. He wants to run away and be left alone. And he's still there.
See, and now that we're like, we have to like always, because it's Star Wars, retroactively, like, you know, give different context to things that might not line up in canon. I feel like now that scene reads to me is like he was just trying to make a point in Rogue One. And so he kind of like maybe cheesed the numbers a little bit on like how long he's actually been in this fight.
For sure.
You want to talk about
since I was five, like 5 years.
But if you want to talk about it, like about being part of the fight.
Yeah.
When you go back, I think the whole point of this show is Cassian's always been part of the fight, whether he wanted to be or not. And he only realized it a few years before Rogue One. When he says he's in the fight, I honestly took that as when you look at those kids that are living alone, Lord of the Flies style, because of this mining operation, which is made to look exactly like a photo of a lithium mine, which is displacing people in South America and Africa right now. It's destroying communities. I think what Cassian comes to realize maybe after he joins the rebellion is the Empire has always been crushing him, and he has always been trying to live his life his way regardless, and that is the fight that he's been a part of. He's always been actively against them whether he knew it or not.
Damn,
that, like everybody else.
And that just that makes him a even more of a better foil to Jyn Erso, and now it's just like, now I want this same treatment for Jyn Erso to make me actually care about her character a little bit, you know, and give more context to everything that happens
impossible.
To her in Rogue. Well, like, we thought it was impossible with Andor, and then they did this Andor show, and it fucking kicks ass.
Right.
Like, give me a young teenage Jyn Erso show where she has to deal with Saw Gerrera, you know?
I didn't think it was impossible. I didn't think it was impossible.
All right.
A Jyn Erso show is a little tougher because you're right. The timeline is much more compressed.
Yep.
And there are harder things to do. Although, I mean, watching her train with Partisans for a while would be kind of cool.
It would be
kind of
cool.
I think she can pop up in another show, but I don't want a whole Jyn Erso show.
That's fair. That's totally fair.
I want a Bix show, and I want Jyn Erso to pop up in that somehow.
That would be cool.
I like that.
That would be cool. And then the last thing, speaking of timeline stuff, of course, we have to remember, like, stuff's happening around the same time as Rebels.
Yep.
And we know, like, Rebels, like, it's not, I think, until the end of season one of Rebels, correct me if I'm wrong, where that's when we kind of fully see, like, the cells come together and start to fight alongside each other. So I'm just really interested to see when we're talking about, like, how quickly is this stuff going to crumble beneath Mothma's feet and stuff like that, and where they have to, like, full-on, like, mask off fight against the Empire and stuff like that. Like, how soon is that? And like, do we get some crossover there a little bit, maybe? Who knows?
We will.
Yeah, this has been very interesting. And I love, once again, with every episode, they've been picking the right people to direct and to be DPs. This one was Benjamin Caron, who is another director that they pulled from The Crown. They're people from Netflix, and particularly from The Crown. And I feel like that stuff works really well because The Crown is such a slow, tense show that it really makes all of these inter-character scenes pop. And then Damian Garcia, who shot this episode, has shot the majority of Narcos Mexico for Netflix, which is another incredibly beautiful show.
I've only ever seen trailers, but every time I see any of those trailers, I'm like, fuck, this is well shot.
quick thing,
I hope we get Hera. And or our big blue boy next week. I hope my heart of hearts that we get to see him.
It's too early. Even if he's coming, it's too early. Right now, all of the bad guys are so.
I don't think he needs to be a main thing, but just as like an introduction, just a little bit as a live action thing. Just to get people like mentally prepared of like where Ahsoka's gonna go and shit.
I don't think it's gonna happen, but I do think that Disney and Star Wars have this perfect storm right now with this show. That if Andor had a post credit tease of something like Thrawn, I think that could be the final nail in the coffin for the people that aren't watching this show based on word of mouth to be like, okay, now I need to watch this show.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's gonna happen.
Okay.
Do you think it's gonna happen, Sage?
No, not this season. It could happen next season is the only hope, but they're not sliding that into a finale. This show has already been so big that it feels like if they're following any kind of patterns they have been so far, that like they've gone big and this story has so much to hinge. Like there's such a big point that we're coming to. I can't imagine being like, yeah, we're doing a funeral. Everybody for every different reason is looking for Cassian. And oh, hey, Thrawn's here too.
I feel like if we're getting Thrawn on Disney Plus, it's more likely to be in the Ahsoka show or the Acolyte. I don't think this is the show where we get Thrawn.
And again, for my theory, it's not like, oh, he becomes the main villain. He's a main character now. But just as like a little tease of just like to give some people who refuse to watch the animated stuff to just give some context of who this guy was before everything went to shit for the Empire.
You got Wolf Yularen. You're never happy.
I'm just saying, like, I could see it just being like what we kind of wanted for CG character in Rogue One. Why am I blanking on his character name? Who's part of the Empire? And they should have
Gullet.
Not Bor Gullet.
Tarkin.
Tarkin. Thank you. Where we kind of wanted a little bit more of like. Maybe not full on shots of his face and like a little more just like teasing that he's there. I could see that for Thrawn of just like a quick conversation with Dedra, you know, just something quick. But that's all I personally need. And I personally wouldn't even want anything bigger than that if we were to get it in Andor either next week or season two.
I bet we get something big next episode to like just build the hype for season two because we know season two is happening, because we know the show is a two and done, like it's all set up.
Yeah,
I think that they're going to be like, no, let's have the fun with this because people are going to be rewatching the show or watching it for the first time, binging it for the first time, all of that. I don't know if it's going to be Thrawn, but I bet we get a post-credit scene and I bet it's going to be a banger. I don't know what it's going to be, but we'll see next week.
Bor Gullet.
It could be Bor Gullet. It could be. Let us know in the comments below if you think there's going to be a post-credit scene or anything, if there's going to be any of that. I'm not saying it needs it. I'm saying I think it'll be there. Remember, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunny, just like the rest of the final Patreon producers we have. Ryan Anderson, Kenny Kimball, Eric Velasquez, Ivan Quiz, Scotty Wyatt, Alex Gradle, Mama Murr, Al Tribesman, the Predator, Jacob Meyer, Stefan Stryker, Gordon McGuire, Burt Meg, Jason L., James Davis, Nanobiologist, Arrow Joe, DJ Kanto, Ryan T. from Tennessee, Derek Gehrig, Donald Eccles, Short Fuse 06, Jordan Gehrig. Harrison, and Sean Valoric. Thank you all so very much. Anthony and Sage, where can people find you?
Oh, my stars and garters, thank you for asking. You can find me everywhere on the internet at acarboni, except for on Twitch, where I'm at Anthony Carboni. Twitch, you cowards, it's mine. Give it back to me. I ran a poll. I said I would only buy and play one of these games. It would either be God of War Ragnarok or Sonic Frontiers. And it looks like God of War Ragnarok won out.
Wow.
And
so today I voted for Ragnarok because I wanted you to play a good game.
Today at 5, people did not want to see the chaos. They wanted to see me play a good game. So 5 p.m., me and God of War Ragnarok. Check that out. And then, of course, Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 8 a.m., me and Sage, you can watch on Pixel Circus, twitch.tv/Pixel Circus for It's Too Early, our morning pop culture news show. Listen, I know there are other pop culture news show. I know there are some of them that are on this very channel, but here's what I'll tell you. We're the only one you need to watch.
Whoa.
It's a fact, everybody.
That's fair.
Pixel Circus, check it out. Sage, what about you?
I voted for the Sonic game because I... hate goodness. You can find me everywhere on the internet at Not Sage. You can find me on my channel and also on Pixel Circus with Anthony and with a bunch of other stuff because that's the channel I made. So follow that.
Hell yes. Until next time, may the force be with you.
Boys!
Hell yeah, y'all.